Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, let's do this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is, Are You Going to San Antone, which is a song written by South Texas native Doug Somm. The version I'm playing, is by Charlie Pride, who lived in Memphis for a while. So I'm bringing San Antonio and Memphis together the way they will be brought together tonight at FedEx Forum.
I don't know what's must win anymore. You tweeted out that Dylan Brooks, questionable soreness toe.
Yeah, and the funny thing is people are so conspiracy theory oriented around the Grizzlies now. I almost wish I hadn't done that. So I had one person asking me, is it just injuries or something else going on? And then someone else asked, is this related to the Zach Randolph Enes Kanter trade? Like, no, he's injured. Like, it's just there's no conspiracy, it's just he's injured, right? And so basically I meant to ask JB Bickerstaff about it yesterday, but there was so much else going on, and then they cut him off, 6-7 minutes in. And so I was going to ask him about Javon Carter and other stuff and didn't get a chance. And so this morning I talked to somebody at the Grizzlies and said, hey, what's up to Dylan Brooks? Is it day to day? You think it'll be out longer? And the response I got was, I think we're going to put out an update today. And that basically means, if it's day to day, you don't put out an update, right?
Right.
So I don't know whether it's how bad it is or whatever. So I don't want to, but it's something more than just his toe sore and he's out tonight.
Right. I found it, I don't know what I expected because, like I said earlier in the show, I didn't expect to walk into practice and have people ripping out chunks of their hair. It just seemed relaxed and normal.
No, I agree. And when I talked to somebody this morning, I expressed surprise about that. And I was told the same thing that Conley said yesterday. He said, we had a great practice. And you can actually hear it through the doors. Me and Peter were talking, but I could hear it felt noisier and more active than a typical one does. Who knows whether it has any. They may get waxed tonight. I have no idea. But I do think that they came back to town with the, and this is sort of the theme in what I wrote. A lot of people said was okay, let's exhale. We just went through all this drama, and it is apparently resolved for the moment. The two guys who were mad they hadn't been traded, they've been traded. And the guy who was yelling at the GM in practice and tweeting all a bunch of stuff, he's gone now. And, Omri Caspi and Garrett Temple had their fight, whatever. Let's all take a deep breath. We're back home. Let's have a practice. This is our team. Now let's go out and play. Of course, we're 4 weeks from the trade deadline, so this may not be their team in a few weeks.
Right.
Think they will be active between now and the trade deadline. And so, this may not be their team. They may not be set for the rest of the year.
I'll bookmark that and get to that in a minute. But, yeah, it felt like, and indeed, Mike Conley said this, they weren't going to practice. And then he said, we all felt like we needed to practice. It feels like this is trying to reset. And it was interesting to me. Did you buy the whole, both Mark and Mike made a point of saying, at the beginning of the season, if we took a punch, we would just think, okay, well, that was their turn, and next our turn's coming. Now we take a punch and we fold. And they didn't think it was fatigue or physical or whatever else. They thought it was confidence. We don't believe we're going to come back, and so therefore we don't come back.
Yeah, I don't think it's either or. Because
I get to the Mark stuff in a minute, too.
I didn't write about that in my little post-practice thing just because it was going to be long enough already.
Right.
The theme was sort of the reset,
right.
So I sort of left that alone. But I do think that stuff is very meaningful because you can see it when you watch the games. You can see the...
They
get in the middle of the second half and the other team makes a run. It was just what Conley said. It was like you sort of hang your head, right? That sense of fight has not been there. And I think in most of the beginning of this downturn, there were a couple games like home against the Lakers or whatever, but most of these games that they were losing were competitive games. And that has started to change in the last week or so where they've sort of let go of the rope in the second half of some of these games, which is not what we had seen early on. And that's a dispiriting trend, right? And so I do think a lot of it is sort of that confidence and that can you maintain cohesion in the face of adversity, right? I do think that's a lot of the story.
When did this start? Like, when did, like, the Miami game was big, obviously, that game. Actually, it was a game where I interviewed Robert Pera.
Right.
He was talking. At that point, there was still looking up. That was an unfortunate one to get away. But I remember when I was asking him, I still said, you know, the outlook was still, well, we made a lot of smart additions, and we've got a cohesive team, and we see the value of continuity, and JB's, like, is there a moment when they,
you know, I mean,
bad?
We talk about 12-5 as the high watermark, right? The next game was at the Clippers. They lost in overtime.
Okay.
Whatever. And then you lose that home game against the Knicks with Fizdale, which is sort of disappointing.
Yep.
And then the next game was home against Toronto, which now you've lost three in a row, but it's Toronto. But that's the game where Gasol sprained the ankle. And then at that point, they even came back and they won again. I mean, you know, they beat the Clippers at home. They won at New Orleans. I mean, Gasol could barely move, but he was physical with Anthony Davis. Right. He ended up squeaking out that game. And then that blowout against the Lakers is when it, like, really – they were 15-9 going into that home game against the Lakers where they got blown out. And so from 15-9, that is 3-13 since then. So that's really when it took a nosedive.
Okay, and one of the points you make in your piece today, I've tweeted it out. You can read it at the Daily Memphian. Is and you mentioned this yesterday, but you've sort of looked at it more deeply. The usage of Mark and you refuse to believe it's just moody Mark.
I mean, Gasol dismisses the physical. I think people internally think it's moody Mark and they don't think it's physical. But I to me it's so it doesn't have to be one or the other. That was my point, like either or thing. But I just think it's so transparent to look at these three things. One. His personal, the team downturn we just talked about, but Mark Gasol's personal downturn happened the exact moment when that injury happened. Like, it lines up exactly. That's one thing. Two, his workload, minutes-wise, as I illustrated, is way out of step with players of his size and his age.
Give
like, some, there's nothing else like it in the
sense,
league.
Give people a little bit of a sense of
he's ninth in the NBA this season in total minutes played. The only other 7-footer who's in the top 20 is Karl Anthony Towns, who's below Gasol on the list, and is 23 years old, is a decade younger. The only player of Gasol's age, 33 or older, who is in the top 20 is PJ Tucker, who's, you know, a role player for the Rockets, so he's not asked to do as much. He didn't have the ball, like, you know. And so Gasol's workload relative to his size and age is there's nothing else in the league that's like that right now. And then the third component is, if you look at the Grizzlies' schedule, and a lot of people talked about this, there were a lot more off days in the first month than there have been since. And so, A, Gasol's own play took a downturn coinciding with that ankle injury, and B, his poor play and the team's poor play both coincided with the schedule tightening up and having fewer rest days. And a lot of people talk about all season long that their record with 2 days rest is really good, and as the rest gets less, their record gets worse, right?
Right.
And so to me, these things, you can talk about moodiness and chemistry and all that matters, but to me, those three things are very tangible. I don't know how you can dismiss them.
Right.
And they all work together in unison.
It was interesting, I thought, that JB, when I asked him about his relationship with management.
He answered as well as he possibly could.
And
it's not even just like you gave a good answer like you're a politician, like – it was good because I think we both believed him. It seemed like he was being truthful. It wasn't like a good spin.
Right.
It was an honest answer to a direct question. Right?
He did not deny that there was disagreement. He said, we are not always going to disagree. We disagree, and then we move on. And so he was acknowledging the disagreement,
yes,
which everyone has sort of understood, that there was disagreement over the usage of Chandler Parsons. And then he said, we move on, which I also believe.
And that's the difference, you know, when you look at
Dave Yeager
or you look at Fizdale, like,
right.
I think, you know, it, to me, it's somewhat more similar to Lionel. I mean, Lionel, there was more of the tension in the back and forth, but he's similar to Lionel in that Lionel didn't care to lie to you. Like, Lionel would just tell you what he thought about stuff, right?
Right.
And so Lionel was more ornery than Bickerstaff, which made him harder to deal with, but may have also made him more effective. It was interesting, Tony Allen did a long interview with Vernon on his show yesterday and talked about, like, how effective Lionel was at motivating players. And so, I mean, that's a difference. But I do feel like Bickerstaff is the least strategic in his conversation since Lionel, right? He's more direct and more honest and less strategic in what he's saying.
Well, and also there's with Lionel, there was always this sort of paranoid framework
right.
by which he was strategic in a different way. He was like, he anticipated some evil intent in your question.
Yes, even if
even if there wasn't any, right, and then he addressed that. Whereas JB's just totally straightforward.
Yes.
Like, he just totally, I mean, it, pleasure to deal with in that sense. I don't mean he's the most quotable guy in the world, but he just sort of feels like he tells you the truth.
And that's part of, I think
he can.
I think that's part of what won people over last year, even amid the, even amid the tanking, both internally and externally. Now, that is separate from the question of, like,
whether
are you a good coach,
totally,
right?
Separate question.
And I think that's been a mixed bag this season, obviously.
Right.
But I do think that his response to that helped to tamp down, at least to a degree, the short-term question about, like, the coaching stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. You said you think they will be active between now and the trade deadline.
I don't want people to run with that and say, oh, they're going to trade. I'm not talking about Marc Gasol. I would be shocked. And I'm not talking about Mike Conley, where I would go to my fainting couch if that happened, right? Like, I'm talking about Jermichael Green, basically, or whatever. I'm talking about that kind of stuff. I do think that – I don't think they're done trying to make moves between now and the deadline. And so I think there's a good chance they are not done making trades.
To get what? To do what?
That is the question of, like, if you're talking about Jermichael Green or even Garrett Temple or even Justin Holiday, all these expiring contracts, right? It is the same question as the Chandler Parsons question. It's just a smaller one, right? And one that is more pressing because they are expiring contracts now, not expiring contracts next season. And if you're trading an expiring contract, the question is, are you trying to get better now or get better later? Because you can trade expiring contracts for both purposes, but they're going to be different trades. And that's the thing. I think it is unlikely at this point. I wouldn't rule it out. I think it's unlikely they're going to re-sign Jermichael Green. And so at that point, if you have an impending free agent you don't think you're going to re-sign, you're going to explore trades, right? This is obvious. I think it's less obvious with Temple, but I wouldn't rule that out either. I think it's going to depend. You know, the deadline is still a month away. You don't have to make it. You can wait up until the deadline. And so I think
the range of things is either picks, right? You could try to get those 2 seconds.
You're either going to take back. You're going to take back a quote unquote bad, like a bad, an unusable, a sunk cost bad contract and get a draft pick with it,
right?
Or like 2 seconds or whatever. Or you're going to take back a player you deem useful that the other team doesn't because they're in a different place than you are. And so you flip the expiring for a longer-term contract, but one you think can play for you, right?
Right. At what positions? Like, what do you think they're trying to accomplish?
Well, I think that you always need wings in the NBA. No matter how many wings you have, you can always get better and you can always get more. I don't know if Shelvin Mack or Javon Carter at this point is the long-term answer. I think they should use someone who can make shots off the bench in the backcourt. I mean, that's been a need for 10 years, and it's still a need because it's not Shelvin Mack. Even if Javon Carter pans out, it's a defense-first player, right? It's not like who's going to get you buckets. What they wanted Marshawn Brooks to
think their Holiday pick was their answer to the wing position, and that's that. You think they could be looking for more wing shooting help?
Yes, always. 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 Because the other thing is, like, Kyle Anderson can play the four. So if you're trading Jermichael Green, you're basically freeing up backup power forward minutes, and you've got two players in Kyle Anderson and Omri Hasby who can shift right into that. Because when you were good early in the season, that's what you were doing. You were playing Kyle Anderson and Omri Hasby at power forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Has the Zach Randolph Cantor trade happened, or is they
not,
discussing?
No, I think that's just
a rumor. What is the behind it? What would be
they're both on expiring contracts. Cantor is now out of the rotation for the Knicks, which sounds weird if you're a Grizzlies fan because you just saw this dude go crazy
right.
in FedEx form, but whatever. So they're both on expiring contracts. They're both out of the rotations for their respective teams. So it sounds like just a my problem for your problem kind of thing, right?
The happy reunion between David Fizdale.
My guess would be Sacramento says, "Hey, Cantor, he could help
us right now."
And Knicks are probably saying, "Hey, we're not playing this guy, and you know, maybe Zach would be less of a problem for us." You know, I don't know.
Right.
Although I didn't get the sense that
sense that Cantor was a problem. There's the political.
I didn't get the sense that Randolph and Fizdale were like best of friends. I don't.
Right, that's the
Fizdo, like, took him out of the starting lineup.
That's why I was joking. The joyful reunion between Zach Randolph and David Fizdo. What'd you think of Thibodeau getting fired?
It was overdue. I mean, I don't wish for anybody to get fired, but, like, it's not surprising. I mean, I'm surprised it didn't happen, like, before the season almost, when he messed up the whole Jimmy Butler thing on the front end. A, I think it's become pretty clear it's a bad idea to have someone who's your head of basketball operations and your coach at the same time.
Right.
Like, I got to think that's just not going to happen again for a while. That has been a mistake.
You know, didn't work at Detroit.
Right.
Didn't work in Minnesota.
Yeah. And so I just think that's out. Like, that whole paradigm.
Didn't work in the Clippers. Didn't work at the Clippers before they
finally.
Stock.
They kept Doc Rivers in the job, the coaching job, but then they took
the other stuff away from him.
I think everyone knows now, like that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And then, Thibodeau was not, he'd messed all that up from a front office standpoint, and he wasn't, I don't think, getting the best out of that team on the floor. Like, I don't think that team's a playoff team in the West either, but I don't think he was getting the best out of it. And so, like, that was not surprising to me.
I wonder if Ryan Saunders is going to get the job. It's kind of a sweet story. Flip's son, who went to Wayzata High School.
Right. And in some ways, if he's successful.
By the way, he was manager for Tubby Smith's Minnesota team.
I chatted with him this was a few years ago, but I chatted with him at the Starbucks across from FedEx Forum at the Westin one day before a Grizzlies game. Yeah.
How did you even know who he was?
I think he had a name tag.
Okay,
I mean, I knew there was a person. Right. I knew that
this person existed.
Yes,
I didn't know that was him. Right.
And so, because I have some connections in Minnesota, so I was like, hey, my friend, whatever. So I chatted with him a little bit. I think if he is successful, it would be sort of a bummer for them PR wise, probably, to not give him the job. But I got to think when they made him the interim, their idea wasn't that he keeps the job.
They talk about it, though. They say, I hope he does it. And the players like him. Like, did you see? I don't know if you saw the locker room.
Yeah, I saw
the
locker room
stuff after the players all like him. Maybe just because he's not Tom Thibodeau.
Right. I mean, obviously, Flip Saunders is a major presence not only in the Timberwolves, but in Minnesota, because he was a University of Minnesota player, too. Right. And so,
thoughts about tonight's game?
The Grizzlies won. They beat the Spurs in San Antonio early in the season. Obviously, they got lost pretty bad a few days ago. I don't think the Spurs are playing really good basketball now, and they weren't early in the season. I think Greg Popovich has maybe been the coach of the year. You can say that every year, but I think you can say it again this year.
Now that he doesn't have Tim Duncan, he can win it. Right?
Yeah. I still feel like the Spurs should be a relatively decent matchup for the Grizzlies in the context of good teams. Because the Grizzlies have struggled defending the three, and the Spurs don't shoot a lot of threes. If you're going to get back on track, like, why not tonight, right? I mean, I don't think it's some juggernaut coming in. They've been playing well, but it's not,
It's funny you mentioned they have struggled defending the threes. Earlier on, a month ago, we were talking about whether they could be an elite defensive team. They're no longer an elite defensive team, and a lot of that is being put on Mark. Do you put it on Mark? Like, why did this team going from being, you'd never thought it was the best, but you thought it could be a top five defensive team. Is it just Mark's lack of nimbleness now? Is that the fundamental?
I think team defense is never about one player.
Right.
I think Gasol has clearly not been as good defensively as he was early in the season. That sometimes manifests itself in the three-point stuff, but more often it manifests itself around the rim, right? Although it's all complicated and interconnected. No, I don't know. I mean, I think it's – I don't know. I think Gasol has a lot to do with it, but I wouldn't pin, like, the whole team defense. I mean, it's not like the team defense has collapsed either.
Right.
The team offense is more of an issue than the defense. It's just specifically, in second halves of games and defending the three, like, they are not what they were earlier in the season.
Right. Thank you, Chris. We will talk to you tomorrow. That is Chris Harrington. Read his stuff at the Daily Memphian.